Looking out over the vast expanse of water, wind whipping up the salty air onto the land, there are a great many sights and sounds to be seen and heard on our British coastline. This ocean biome is not only home to fish and gulls, but also the largest bird of prey in Britain, the white-tailed eagle. This huge native bird's wings, with an impressive span of over 2 metres, allow them to soar effortlessly on the natural lift over the waves. They hang on the breeze until the moment is right, before they dive towards the water's surface, plucking their prey from it in their powerful talons. Hello, I'm Tom Morath. I am the Deputy Head of Living Collection at the Hawk Conservancy Trust, and whether it be hawks or harriers, caracaras or kites, I have a passion for birds of prey and understanding their place in the natural world. Our podcast, Nature's a Hoot, is a way to delve deeper into the world of these winged predators to understand their natural history, their current status in the wild, and how we might support them through conservation efforts into the future. This time, I'm finding out more about the largest bird of prey in Britain and the journey they've made to soar in our British skies once more after becoming completely extinct here in the early 20th century. The white-tailed eagle, sometimes known colloquially as the sea eagle or even the flying barn door, is an impressive bird by anyone's standards. Their wingspan is huge, not only in length, but also in width. As a broad-winged soaring bird, they have a huge surface area to their wings, hence their barn door nickname. The males have an average weight of around 5 kilograms, and the larger females can be up to 7 kilos. It's hard to put into words exactly how large these birds look in the air until you've seen one. A buzzard looks to have a large wingspan when they're in the air solo, but against the white-tailed eagle, they're dwarfed.
I suppose the most telling feature of a white-tailed eagle for most of us is their sheer size. It's this enormous bird of prey. It's the UK's largest bird of prey. It has a staggering 2.5 metre wingspan, or 8 foot for those of us that are still working in imperial measure. And that's most obvious kind of thing, and often gets referred to as a flying barn door, which I don't think actually sounds that flattering myself, but hey.
Steve Egerton-Reed is the White-Tailed Eagle Project Officer for Forestry England. It's his job to monitor the eagles as part of the release project on the Isle of Wight, so he knows the birds better than most. There's more to come on that project later. First, I asked Steve to tell us a little more about the lifestyle of the white-tailed eagle.
It's a very good question. It's a question lots of people want to know the answer to. And it's quite a long answer, Tom, so I hope you're comfortable in your chair. So white-tailed eagles, this is an apex avian predator, principally of wetland habitats. So here on the south coast of England, for that kind of context, we're looking at salt marshes, big freshwater lakes, big freshwater rivers, anywhere where there's lots of water, because this bird's favourite food when it's available is fish. So it's very, very similar to bird that you guys, I know, have at the centre. I've looked at the birds and at your centre before, a fantastic place. Got bald eagles, so very, very similar to the North American bald eagle.
Sorry, Steve, I don't know whether there's someone else there as part of this conversation. Who's that?
My cat's just come to say hello. Oh, no, don't step on the keyboard. Everybody wants to get involved when it comes to talking about white-tailed eagles.
Of course they do.
Gosh, that was almost cataclysmic.
Oh, dear.
Thought he was going to press the shutdown button, which does work pretty quickly. Sorry, Tom.
No, it's fine. It's exciting.
So this bird's preferred food when it's available is fish, but it also eats a lot of different types of water birds. So these wetland environments are, of course, places that we find a whole range of water birds as well. So birds that feature in this diet include things like gulls, geese, ducks, so whole variety of species within those groups of birds. And of course, that's what the literature tells us. That's what observations from other parts of Europe tells us. But it's been really important for us as a project to understand what are white-tailed eagles eating here on the south coast of England. So most diet studies for white-tailed eagles look at prey remains from nests. So to climb a nest at the end of the year, gather all the material out the nest and look at the bones, look at the feathers, look at the mammal fur that might be in the nest and say, okay, this is what those eagles are eating.
It sounds like they've got a pretty good mixed, varied diet, Steve. I don't mind that myself.
It does sound, I mean, like white-tailed eagle nests are quite manky, Tom. So, yeah, you have to go up there with a clothes peg or something for your nose, I think. But very fascinating. Of course, you can glean a lot of information about these birds from what's going on in those nests. But until very, very recently, and we'll talk about that again in a little moment, I'm sure. Until very recently, we've not had any breeding eagles here on the south coast of England. So, understanding what these birds are eating is perhaps not quite possible in the way that other people are doing it. So we can gather pellets. So eagles cough up pellets like a lot of birds do. We could gather pellets, look at what's in those. I'm sure you've looked at pellets before, Tom.
Yeah, I
It's
have.
really hard, isn't it,
Can be,
to
yeah.
know what on earth is in this ball of really disgusting, smelly mess.
Yeah, of course, because they're not like an owl pellet, are they? Where owls will retain the bones in their pellets, so
Yeah,
makes it
barn owl
harder.
pellets are quite nice. Kind of the romantic element of pellet dissection, I suppose. White-tailed eagle pellets, really grim, not gonna lie. And of course, they've got a really broad diet, so you need to really know your stuff to be able to tell what's in those pellets. It is challenging. One of the other weaknesses of it is that pellets don't often have fish remains in them, so we won't get a very good idea of whether they're eating fish or what fish are being eaten. So the way we look at it is purely through observations. So we stand for hours and hours in the field with a telescope, a pair of binoculars. Any one of your listeners can do this. So if anybody's watching white-tailed eagles that are listening and you've got some observations to send to us, please do send them. Send them to Tom, and I'm sure Tom will be happy to put you in touch with me.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
So we spend hours in the field watching and learning what birds are doing. And way that kind of helps us. Of course, we understand what they're eating, but it also tells us how they're acquiring those meals too, which is really, really important in the context of what this bird does in the landscape. What we have found on the south coast of England is that, predominantly speaking, fish and water birds are what feature in diet. But really amazingly is that young birds, which eat quite a lot of rabbits and hares, and rely on carrion more often than not, as they get older, they progress to sort of living in wetland environments. And that's when we see fish starts to feature really, really heavily. So for birds overall, fish features about 25 to 30% of diet. But for older birds, it gets up to as much as 50% of their diet.
Over millennia, these eagles have evolved to dominate the skies across our coastal and wetland habitats in the Northern Hemisphere, as far west as Greenland and as far east as Hokkaido in Japan. Wherever prey is abundant around large bodies of water, lakes, rivers, wetlands and sea, these birds can thrive. Here in the UK, we have many areas fitting this description, and indeed, white-tailed eagles were once a common sight around the British Isles. But as a large bird of prey, the eagles became a target for persecution. Negative associations with the species left sheep farmers worried for their flocks, and gamekeepers fearing for their reared birds. As you can imagine, the conflict of interests did not end well for these birds. In the late 1800s, after millennia of thriving here, they'd all but disappeared in England and Wales, with only a handful of birds surviving in the more remote areas of Scotland. The last bird is thought to have been killed in Shetland in 1918. An entire species disappeared from our British countryside. In the mid-1970s, a project began working on re-establishing populations of white-tailed eagles on the west coast of Scotland. Translocated birds from Norway were released there, and in 1985, the first white-tailed eagle hatched in the wild in the UK in over 70 years. But this species should be here in the south of England too. They've been here before, and were once widespread. It's been the dream of ornithologists and conservationists alike to see white-tailed eagles back here again. Steve and his team of collaborators have been working tirelessly to make that dream a reality.
So this project started in 2019, for those of you that don't know. So a project is licensed by Natural England to release birds here on the Isle of Wight over a 5-year period. Well, just coming up to the end of that period in 2024. And projects licensed to release 60 individuals in that time frame. We collect those birds from Scotland under license from Nature Scot, which is Natural England's equivalent in Scotland. And we bring them to the south coast of England, rear them from a short period on the Isle of Wight before being released. Now, the purpose of that release and purpose of releasing those 60 individuals is to try and re-establish this as a breeding bird again on the south coast of England. And we anticipate those breeding birds to establish somewhere within 50 kilometres of the release area being the Isle of Wight. And we hope by releasing 60 birds, we might establish an initial population of somewhere between 6 and 10 breeding pairs. Now, doesn't mean to say that the absolute aim is for to have just 6 to 10 pairs. Absolutely not. We'd like to see this bird re-established across all of southern England. But 6 to 10 pairs is what we believe is sufficient to make this a self-sustaining population. So, given the context of white-tailed eagle breeding biology, we're talking that next 5 to 10 years to see that population be reached.
Releasing birds like this back out into the wild is no easy task. Every nail-biting minute has been monitored by those involved in the project, everybody hoping that the birds succeed and go on to live long, healthy lives in the wild. One way success might be measured at this stage is by observing the infancy of a self-sustaining population. Birds that find a mate, establish a pair, and raise their own youngsters. And this year, Steve had some very exciting news to share.
So first breeding wasn't really anticipated until next year. But as you well know, Tom, this year we were very, very lucky and we saw the first breeding birds in southern England in all that time.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing, Steve. I remember hearing the news myself. Can you just talk us through what that was like to watch these birds going through the motions and then eventually hatching and raising a youngster, essentially successfully bringing back white-tailed eagles to the south of England?
It was staggering. I mean, it wasn't something we really expected. And the pair that bred, we don't say where it is at the moment. That's partly to protect the bird's welfare and partly to maintain the privacy of the local community. But that pair were only 3 years old. White-tailed eagles, as we've said a few times, breed at 4 or 5 usually. So to have them try and breed at 3 is really unusual. Does happen, but ordinarily those individuals that are 3 will breed with older birds. So for 2 3-year-olds to breed is almost unheard of. So all the way along, we kind of thought that's as far as they'll get. They started building a nest last autumn and into the early winter. Oh, that's cool. Nice of them to do that, isn't it? Saves us a job thinking about where we could try and help build a nest for them. And then they got to the point where they were lining a nest and they were copulating. We thought, that's nice. That'd probably be all that happened. And then we could tell they'd laid an egg. We didn't know how many eggs they'd laid. They might have laid more, and white-tailed eagles can lay 2 or 3 eggs. We could see they were incubating. Thought, okay, well, maybe the egg's fertile. Maybe it's not. Maybe mess up incubation along the way. They're inexperienced. Who knows? And even at hatching, we kind of thought, will they know what to do? And we really shouldn't have doubted them at all, because, of course, not only did they go through all that process, but that bird has fledged. And amazingly, first white-tailed eagle chick to fledge in England all that time. It's doing really well, really well. I mean, when we spoke last time in the meadow, we were saying it was doing well, and it still is doing well. So it's fantastic.
Yeah, so
fantastic.
Steve, have you managed to keep tabs on that particular bird? Do you know what it's up to?
Yeah, so that bird is... So white-tailed eagles, for those of you guys that don't know, they have quite a long breeding cycle. So it starts in the winter. Incubation is really long. It's about 38 days, sometimes a little bit longer. And then white-tailed eagles fledge at around 10 or 11 weeks old. So at that age, of course, they're fully grown. But even though they're fully grown and they can fly, they're not very good at finding their own food. So they continue to be fed by their parents for quite a long period. And that can really run into a new year, into the next breeding cycle. So at the moment, so all the birds in the project just say are fitted with GPS devices. And this wild fledgling we were able to fit with a GPS device too, so we know and understand his movements. But at the moment he's still hanging around with his parents. Seems like he's getting closer and closer to independence, whether that will be willing independence or unwilling independence.
Yeah, brilliant. It's so great to see that these birds have been able to so quickly re-establish themselves as part of that British landscape. Could you tell us a little bit more about why the Isle of Wight? Why was this a place that was chosen to start this re-release programme in the south of England?
So the Isle of Wight was the last place that we know these birds bred on the south coast of England. So last time these birds bred 240 years ago was 1780. It's a place called Culver Cliff, on the east coast of the Isle of Wight. You can actually go to Culver Down and overlook that cliff still now, and there's a pub and there's an ice cream van up there now. So it's well worth a visit, Tom. I do recommend it. It's very, very nice.
Yeah, sounds great.
And it's a beautiful view of the Isle of Wight. And I don't work for a tourist board or anything like that, but I am from the Isle of Wight, so I do have a I do think it's a wonderful place. So for any of your listeners and members that haven't been to the Isle of Wight, do come to the Isle of Wight, go to Culver Down, and see the last place that eagles lived on our coastline. So there's that element. And I don't have to tell you, of course, and I don't probably don't have to tell any of your members, but there is a real sort of enthusiasm at the moment on the south coast of England for landscape recovery and species recovery. So there's a lot of support for that, for this kind of movement. All of the habitats and species are still, all the sort of prey species are still present here on the south coast of England. The only reason this bird came extinct was because of direct human persecution. So in that respect, a lot of things are still in place for white-tailed eagles to inhabit south coast of England. Maybe look at the nearest population to us in lowland Europe, the Netherlands. It's a busy place, very, very similar ecology, very similar land use. White-tailed eagles are thriving there, having naturally recovered. And I suppose the next question might be, whether they're recovering naturally in the Netherlands, why on earth go to the trouble of bringing eagles back to our south coast of England? Surely, Tom, they'll get here on their own if we just be patient. And it probably would happen, but of course, being young people that we are, Tom, even we might not see white-tailed eagles return in our lifetime, if we don't intervene. This bird has a behavior called natal phylopatry, which sounds really exotic, but all that means is they like to go back to where they perceive their natal site to be, where their fledging site is. So they try and breed as close to home as they can. And if they can't do that, they'll either remove an existing bird by fighting for its territory, or they will set up a territory as close as they can. And that's how the population expands, but expands really slowly. You've got a really slow breeding cycle. It takes 4 or 5 years for them to reach maturity. They only at best have one or two young a year. So it's a very, very slow process. And to give that some context, in northeast France, there is a very small breeding population, and they've had regular visiting white-tailed eagles for the last 60 years, but they only had their first breeding in 2011. And I know you guys have had a visiting continental white-tailed eagle over your centre, and I'm going to ask you about that in a minute because I was very jealous. But actually, we don't get regular sightings of eagles on the south coast without this translocation program. So yeah, for us it could be more than 60 years before we see breeding eagles again on the south coast naturally. So the only means to do it in our lifetime, or assuredly in our lifetime, is through a reintroduction program.
Yeah, and it's fabulous to know that it's possible. I guess then delving a little bit deeper into that, clearly we're in a bit of an echo chamber here. Anything that's supporting bringing birds of prey back in a sustainable way that helps them to re-establish themselves is going to be a big positive, certainly for me. I know it is for you. Why do you think it's important in the first place to have white-tailed eagles back here in the UK?
I think that's a really interesting question, actually, and it's one, we can certainly talk about the ecology of these birds. You know, this is, we don't have apex predators anymore in England, full stop. We don't. So, you know, having, you know, trying to restore those animals is really important from an ecological function, you know, interactions, particularly with these mid-level predatory birds are really important in our landscape and something that's been missing for a long, long time in terms of functional ecology. You know, 240 years since the last bird, but way longer than that since this bird was widespread across England. And when I talk about those interactions, I'm not talking about eagles necessarily predating buzzards, harriers, kites, or anything like that, and will happen occasionally, but it's not a regular occurrence. But it's actually changing the behavior of those species and having those lower down, those lower trophic level effects. So, you know, we think about maybe breeding waders, maybe you know, some of the species that peregrines eat. For instance, a white-tailed eagle can pirate a peregrine. And actually, if peregrine is silly enough to keep going back to the same spot and getting pirated, it won't do very well. It might displace that nest. It might you know, not necessarily have any really drastic action on peregrine, but it'll change where they forage and perhaps change what they forage for. And those are really important interactions in our ecosystem. As an apex predator, you know, they do eat things. So some of the species they eat don't have a lot of natural predators in our landscape anymore. So a couple of really good examples would be things like Canada geese. All of your listeners will have seen Canada geese in southern England. It's probably one of them, if not the most abundant of our wetland birds now in southern England. And although foxes might eat Canada geese occasionally, don't really have any avian predators that eat Canada geese. So they are important in controlling those animals. And of course, that's a feral bird, but they would have predated our native geese too, years and years ago. And then there's a fish species called pike, really ferocious predator of our freshwater systems. Eagles, along with osprey, herons, and otters, really critical in controlling population levels of those species, of that species. So actually, white-tailed eagles play an important role in that regard.
It's clear then, having white-tailed eagles back in our British skies is not only good for the eagles themselves, but may have a lasting impact on the rest of the ecosystems they're a part of. Do you know, I'm yet to see a white-tailed eagle in the wild, having missed my opportunity when one flew just a few feet above the trees at the Hawk Conservancy Trust. In 2020, a bird flew all the way across from Scandinavia, flying right above the trust above our heads. Watching this bird soar and wheel alongside the local red kites and buzzards who were dwarfed in this bird's presence. My colleague said that it was one of the best wildlife experiences they'd ever had. That day, I was working from home. And of course, I'm not at all bitter about it, as you might imagine. The project on the Isle of Wight is ongoing. The birds involved are being constantly monitored and are known on an individual basis to the team working with them. All have been fitted with coloured rings on their legs for easy identification. Radio transmitters and GPS tracking units have also been used to monitor the birds' movements as they disperse. I asked Steve what comes next for the project and what his hopes are for the species into the future.
Well, we've still got a little bit to do in terms of releasing birds. So we've released 29 birds to date, which is a long way behind that 60. So we may have to consider extending our release period. But we'll think about that as time moves on. We have to think about it pretty quickly, Tom, I suppose, won't we? Because 2024 is not that far away. But of course, the interesting bit isn't releasing the birds, it's what happens next, and seeing how this population expands and learning more about those breeding birds. And of course, that you've got to be got to always be aware that even 6 to 10 pairs is quite a small population. So it will be really eager to follow up that progress even for the next 5 to 10 years. You know, can't one breeding success last year is fantastic, don't get me wrong, but it could be easily to sort of rest on your laurels and think the work is done. But there's a lot of work beyond even the license period ahead of us. So, but what an exciting bunch of work it is. I hope that one day people will look up and go, like they do now, and I'm as guilty of it as anybody else, and I always tell myself off afterwards, go, oh, there's another buzzard. I hope people go, oh, there's an eagle. And just they blend into the landscape to the point that people don't even take note of them anymore.
Now, regular listeners will know what I asked Steve next. I was keen to know, if given the chance, which bird of prey species would Steve be and why?
That's a very difficult question, Tom. I mean, I've watched white-tailed eagles in a hell of a lot, and I don't know if I want to eat what I eat, in truth. I've chopped up a lot of fish to feed eagles over the years, and it doesn't look that appetizing when they eat it, in truth. But I would actually, even despite all the work I've had to do and all the really grim moments with eagles, I'd still, if I had a day as a bird of prey, I'd like to know what it was like to be a white-tailed eagle. I loved what a great moment it would be to see a load of fish coming through a hole in a wall in an aviary on the Isle of Wight as an eagle. And what I'd just love to know what they think on the other side of it. Maybe they're watching me, wondering what is he eating.
It's so exciting to know that we have white-tailed eagles back in English skies once more. What an achievement! Although there's clearly a way to go before these birds are fully established here.
Steve, it's been great chatting to you, and obviously this is a great landing point for anybody who's interested in the White-tailed Eagle project. If people wanted to find out a little bit more about you, your work, and the work going into supporting these eagles, where can they go?
Oh, that's a really good point, actually. So there's a number of places you can get more information about the project. So the Roy Dennis Wildlife Foundation website is a great place to start. I think it's www.roydennis.org. And there's a lot of the background information about the project is on there, the feasibility study, and sort of the license FAQs and things like that are on there. They also have a running blog, which is updated pretty regularly. I think there'll be an up-to-date blog piece not too far away, probably towards the end of the year. Forest England website also has blog articles. So if you go to Forest England and you go into their search box and type eagles, all of the old blogs will come up. If you're on social media, we are at Sea Eagle England and at Roy Dennis WF.
Yeah, brilliant. Definitely check that out if you're interested. Steve, it's been fantastic to talk to you today. Thanks so much for giving up your time, especially as this is the second time we've done this interview, because the first time, listeners, we had a few technical difficulties and Steve was completely inaudible. So thank you, Steve. I hope we get the opportunity to speak again
If we do
in the not
this
too
talk
distant.
again, no, Tom, it might be a bit weird.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think I know all the answers off by heart at this stage. So thank you. See you
Oh,
again.
dear.
I'm yet to see one of these eagles in the wild for myself. But with increasing numbers of my colleagues returning from successful days searching for them, with photographs and memories of their first sighting to last a lifetime, I reckon it's only a matter of time, and perhaps a matter of making a journey further south of the Trust, before I see a wild British white-tailed eagle for myself. And when I do, I'm sure the silhouette of those barn door wings will be imprinted on my mind forever after. I'd like to thank my guest, Steve Egerton-Reed, for his support in putting this episode together and making the time to talk to me about these incredible eagles. If you'd like more information about the conservation and research projects we do at the Trust to support wild birds of prey, you can find out loads more on our website, hawk-conservancy.org. Do you want to help shape future episodes of Nature's a Hoot? Head over to Spotify and tell us which species you'd like to hear more about in future episodes. I'll be back next month, but in the meantime, there's loads more bird of prey content that can be found on our social media pages. You'll find us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and perhaps consider leaving us a review wherever you get your podcasts.